Good morning. My name is Lynn, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the eye care technical advisory panel conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there'll be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Heidi Bosley, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Thank you again to everyone for joining us. We are thrilled to have you provide input on this technical advisory panel and the outcomes project. Before I get into the slides, we did want to just do some introductions, have everyone introduce themselves on the phone, and then also provide any disclosures that may be appropriate. So Dr. Herman, would you like to start?
Sure, I will. My name's David Herman. I'm an ophthalmologist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm on the NQS Outcome Steering Committee and the chair of this technical advisory panel. I'd like to echo Heidi's comments and thank everybody for joining this morning. I could hear people talking about patients, and we know you're all busy people and appreciate you taking your time and applying your effort and expertise to this important work. What I'll do now, Heidi, is I'll turn it back to you, and if you want to do the roll call, but what I'd ask for each one as their name is called, please state your organization and then whether you have any conflicts to disclose. So, Heidi, I'll turn it back to you.
Great. Okay, so Priscilla, why don't we start with you first?
All right, I'm Priscilla Arnold. I'm an ophthalmologist practicing in the Quad Cities. I am an Academy of Ophthalmology nominee for the panel, and I also serve as co-chair of the Eye Care Measure Development Work Group.
Wonderful. Scott?
Scott Friedman. I represent the American Academy of Ophthalmology on the Eye Care CAP panel, and I have no financial conflict related to this information.
Great. And I don't think Mildred was able to join us, so it's Dr. Rochelle?
Yes, just for clarity, it's Reichle. It's very German. Nobody can pronounce it.
I apologize.
That's okay. No problem. I am an optometrist. I represent the American Optometric Association. I'm a partner in Eye Center of Texas, ophthalmology optometry practice in Houston, and I am a member of the American Optometric Association Quality Assurance Committee, and I do not have any financial disclosures.
Great. And then my name is Heidi Bosley. I am the project lead on the Outcomes project with the National Quality Forum. Typically, I don't have disclosures, but I probably should let everyone know on the phone. My previous job was with the American Medical Association Physician Consortium for Performance Improvement, and in fact did work with the PCPI and actually Priscilla to develop the measures that some of which are NQF endorsed right now for eye care. That's the only thing I would need to disclose. We also have Hawa and Sarah, who are NQF staff here, and they'll be helping run the webinar. I don't think there's anyone else on the phone. So why don't I go ahead, Hawa, can you pull up the slides? And I didn't want to spend a lot of time on these slides. They just give some background, but I did want to highlight a few things, so we're going to run through these fairly quickly. If you could go to the second slide. So what I'll just run through is orientation to NQF. I think most of you are familiar with this organization, our current activities. Give you a little high-level information on the outcomes project and what the work plan is, and then we'll get into really a discussion of what are the desired outcomes for eye care and then identifying gaps. Let's go to the next slide. So NQF, as I believe all of you know, is a private, not-for-profit, voluntary consensus standard-setting organization. Currently, we have more than 400 member organizations, and the structure includes a board of directors, the Consensus Standards Approval Committee, the National Priorities Partnership, and then there is a leadership network as well. That's just our homepage. They like to show it. The mission is to improve the quality of American healthcare by setting national priorities and goals, endorsing consensus standards with a primary focus on public reporting, and promoting the attainment of national goals through education and outreach. Why don't we just skip through, because I don't want to have this take up a lot of the time. Can you go down, Hawa, to the Outcomes Project slide, the 14? or 13, yeah. Specific to this project, it is funded by DHHS, and they were asked, NQF has been asked to look at the top 20 Medicare conditions, of which several are specific to eye care. They were asked to look at the wide variation and look at what's out there for outcome measures right now, see if we can expand the portfolio. Primarily it's process measures right now, but we are seeing an increase in outcome measures in the portfolio. So there are multiple phases to this project. Phase one and two are being completed together. Phase one is looking at cross-cutting, which is what the Outcome Steering Committee is looking at. There are also technical advisory panels on pulmonary, cardiovascular, and metabolic, primarily diabetes right now. Phase two includes roughly five other technical advisory panels, bone and joint, cancer, GI, biliary, and infectious disease, and then this last one, which is eye care. Phase three is about to start, and they will be looking at mental health and child health. So as you can see, it's very broad in scope and has been a rather ambitious project to begin with. The project goals are to identify and evaluate and endorse additional measures suitable for public reporting and quality improvement. So again, it's cross-cutting as well as the top 20 common conditions for Medicare. The other key piece, and that's what we're going to spend time to do today on, is identifying gaps. So hopefully this will inform measure developers and others out there of where you as the experts believe the profession and others need to head next. If you can move to the next slide. So the NQF process is really focused on developing consensus and ensuring consensus, and it is a multi-stakeholder approach. So that is why we have on the steering committees primarily the consumers, purchasers, employers, as well as health professionals and providers. The technical advisory panels tend to have more of the clinical experts, so that's why we have optometry and ophthalmology on this panel here. And again, the key is to get input from all stakeholders. If you can move to the next slide. So this slide just shows where you all fall within this project and the consensus process. So we have the project topic, which is the outcomes project. There is a steering committee that is overarching. Dr. Herman sits on that. The key piece is we have chairs, all the chairs of the technical advisory panel sit on the steering committee to ensure the input from you all is represented at the table. And there are, right now are 9 technical advisory panels for this project. All that information will be fed into the steering committee's discussions. Their next one in person is April 20th and 21st. What will happen next after the steering committee meets is a report will be sent out for the membership and public to comment on. It will include measures and also if we are able to get all everyone's gaps discussions incorporated, that will go all at the same time. It may be timed a little bit differently because the gaps piece does not necessarily need to go for vote. If you could go to the next slide. Okay. You can, I talked about this, you can go through again. Can you go down to the project timeline, 23, Hala, thank you. So this just gives you a sense of where we are. The next piece, once all the technical advisory panels meet, they're all meeting by conference call. The meeting is April 20th and 21st for the steering committee. We anticipate that the report will go out for comment in June. Prior to that, you will see the section that really discusses our discussion today, and we'll be able to provide input and any comments that you may have. Ultimately, we anticipate that this will be approved in October. So it goes through a process of comment period, then voting period. All comments will come back, so we will share comments on anything relevant to eye care with you. You'll probably see all the comments in effect. And then it will go to the Consensus Standards Approval Committee, who will review the voting results, the comments, and the recommendations of everyone, and put it forward to the board for ratification. We included in the slides just information of the scope of the project and the evaluation process. Because you don't have measures to evaluate, we didn't receive any. I'm not going to go through them. If you have questions, though, feel free to ask me. We can discuss it. Otherwise, I want to really get into the discussion on the gaps. So how about if you could go down to the left slide? One of the key things that the Outcomes Steering Committee did discuss, and I apologize, I missed that says cardiovascular to say eye care. The Outcomes Steering Committee, when they first met, sat down and said, what are the types of outcomes we would want to be looking for and have submitted and also have discussions on. So you'll see it talks about patient function, symptoms, health-related quality of life, intermediate clinical outcomes, patient experience, utilization, looking at morbidity and mortality, safe and healthy living environment, and so on. So we're just going to leave this slide up here because those are how all the technical advisory panels are framing their discussions. But Dr. Herman, I'll turn this over to you and let you lead the discussion on gaps.
Thank you very much, Heidi, and thanks for the summary of the steering committee's work so far and then kind of how we're trying to formulate things as we move forward. I guess I don't know about the rest of the members of the advisory panel, but I was not particularly surprised that there were no additional standards that came forward. And I think there are some barriers as you sit down, and we do have formal criteria that we've used at the steering committee to evaluate standards. And when we go through those criteria, some of those standards, particularly in the gathering of information, are difficult for an eye care practice to deal with. And I think eye care has several special challenges. Number one, as we look at our steering committee work, most of the information that we get from Medicare and other government payers, and private payers to be perfectly honest, is through the hospitals. And the vast minority of our patients are not hospitalized. Even though many of our practices are procedural, not many procedures are even done in the hospital, and that administrative hospital data is not collected. When we look at, as you look at this slide here, we look about clinical morbidity and health care acquired adverse events or complications. Many of those, even if they occur within the office and not within the hospital. So some of the things that make it easy to establish a standard, particular an outcome, or even a process measure, are not easy from an eye care standpoint. We really, as a area of medicine, have little administratively available quality data. We do have some things that have come out. There's three measures that the NQF have approved in the past, and those are within your packet, I think, there. We have for glaucoma, reduction in intraocular pressure of greater than 15%, and then two measures for cataracts, 20/40 or better visual acuity within 90 days, and then an adverse outcome measures, cataract surgery complications within 30 days requiring additional surgery. So to just kind of set that up, we do know that when we look at the previous slide that there are things that we probably should measure when we look at eye care practices. And with that kind of introduction to that, I'll kind of open the floor up from members to hear any comments about their thoughts about where they think we should be going next.
Well, this is Scott Friedman again. I totally agree with what you said, and I think we are very sensitive to that problem. And what the Academy, the American Academy of Ophthalmology, has done is rolled out our data registry, which has just come out in the last few weeks, which is called the Ophthalmic Patient Outcome Database, OPOD, through Outcome Sciences. And I think we're going to start collecting a lot of data in the clinic and in the ambulatory care setting outside the hospital to start looking at some of these issues and get some more data so we can start dealing with more robust outcome measures outside of hospitals. I think we obviously have a long way to go, but I think the new measures that we've developed are at least a start at dealing with not processes but outcomes, and I think as we proceed in the future, we'll have greater experience and greater amounts of data so we can move forward with that.
Scott, this is Priscilla, and I'd just like to add to that. And I certainly agree with that being an important step forward for us with these measures. One of the real difficulties that we encountered in developing these measures was the fact that to really create them, we had to include a lot of exceptions to the measure. And one of the things that we expect and hope is that with a data registry, we can begin to accumulate information that will help in the risk adjustment process. And I would hope that the NQF and all those interested parties are going to look at that as really another part of what we're doing with outcomes measures. We've obviously just introduced these measures. They're only a couple of them only reportable through a registry. And so we really are looking forward to having information to move this to a higher level of importance and specificity. So that's just another comment about the existing new measures.
And this is Randall Reichle. The American Optometric Association, particularly in the committee that I'm involved in, the Quality Improvement, Quality Assurance Committee, has also been implementing data gathering techniques and looking at the patients that are being seen in optometric practices. As we know, optometrists are treating glaucoma across the country and certainly see many, many post-op cataract patients. So we are finding the same difficulty in gathering information because, in essence, it is in the practice. It's not something that we can go into a practice and review charts. It's a more or less voluntary thing. But we have stressed this to our membership and perhaps can coordinate or cooperate with what the Academy of Ophthalmology is doing in gathering this information.
So in looking, Scott Friedman again, American Academy of Ophthalmology, and looking at these useful outcome measures, if you take a look at these individually, patient function, symptoms, health-related quality of life, our measure that it, looks at the patients greater than 20/40 is a surrogate for patient function and quality of life, because there's data that shows in our literature that if you have 20/40 vision, your quality of life obviously is improved and your patient function is improved. So although we don't really measure patient function quality of life, that is a surrogate for that. We're also looking at non-mortality clinical morbidity, looking at patients going back to surgery within 30 days. That's an indirect measure of morbidity as well. So we are starting to look at some of these points that are presented on the slide. Obviously, we don't have to worry about mortality, and the other ones I think are kind of intertwined in what we've already looked at.
Scott, a question, and a question for Randall as well. The treatment of macular degeneration has made great strides in the last few years with the VEGF inhibitors. We've taken something that was essentially an acute process with very few available interventions and have made it a chronic disease like diabetes or renal failure and requiring multiple interventions over a long period of time. Has either of your groups sat down and taken a look at this and started to look at that particular aspect? Because I think it hasn't hit in the top 20 of the Medicare roll yet, but with the long-term interventions and the high cost of the medication available, it certainly will soon. Any thoughts along those areas?
Sure. So what I didn't say before is I'm a retina specialist, so I do this for a living, and I can give you a wealth of information about treatment of AMD. So I totally agree with the cost for treating AMD patients has gone up tremendously, but I can tell you that the benefits and the success rate has gone up in incredible amounts, and this is probably the number one thing that has improved in my clinical practice. As you know, there is a trial going on which is sponsored by the federal government comparing Avastin to Lucentis. So we are looking at trying to reduce cost for the treatment of AMD, and that study will be available. The results will be available in 2011. There's also lots of other products being developed for longer acting regimens, longer different compounds that last longer, don't need as quite frequently treatments, don't need as frequent treatments, and even Avastin regimens that are being delivered in the eye that last longer. So we are sensitive to the cost of treating wet macular degeneration in 2010. And I think we are looking at that. And I, what I have said to the PCPI, that I think we should start looking at measures for macular degeneration, because I think there is quite a large discrepancy on treatments of macular degeneration, whether you should get an OCT measuring how the eye is responding, a test to measure response once a month or once a year. And I think we'll see a large discrepancy. And what we want to do is, although we want to continue to maintain the high level, we want to decrease the amount of testing, which will, in fact, decrease the cost down the road for treating these conditions. Because I'm sure it's going to be down the road, it's going to be a huge burden to the government and other carriers for treating this condition.
Yeah, this is Randy Reichle. From the AOA standpoint, this has come up on the radar screen. We have discussed it. And as you can imagine, since this is not a procedure we're doing in our office, the appropriateness of referral and the appropriateness of when the patient is returned and basically the monitoring of the condition, it has been one of the focuses of our attention. On a personal note, one of my partners, one of the ophthalmologists that I work with, is a retina specialist. And as was discussed, I'm with her 3 days a week. And we see literally a ton of these patients, and it's become a not even major. It is the majority of our practice now. So it's amazing to see what benefits this gives, but it does create the financial issue that has already been discussed. Is certainly an issue for the federal government and going forward with the finances of our system. So yes, that it's. I think more in our camp would be looking at appropriateness of referral and monitoring long-term.
And Scott, correct me if this is not an accurate statement, but my understanding is that the recommendation for monitoring is in flux, it's being determined, it's not truly out there in an evidence-based manner now. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah. So the academy, American, I guess the top is wonderful. So we developed these preferred practice patterns. We were one of the first organizations to develop those. It was done in the 80s before anybody required them, and we are very sensitive to quality in medicine. Unfortunately, we can't keep up with technology. And treating wet macular degeneration is evolving on a monthly basis. There's newer things coming out. There's dozens of different compounds or products in industry that are being developed, and no one really knows the best treatment regimen. There is some data to suggest, to guide us, but basically everybody does it somewhat differently based on anecdotal experience and personal preference and some data. But there is no good scientific data to support when to see patients, follow-up regimens, and treatment regimens. We do it based on some anecdotal data, limited clinical trials, and case series. But certainly there is data which will come out in the next few years will suggest us and guide us for the treatment. Having said that, it is going to be a large cost burden on the healthcare system, because it does require at least initially monthly visits with lots of procedures and diagnostic testing and lots of treatments. And in the short term, it's probably not going to get better over the next year or two. But we are working at longer acting products. But I think as the discussion evolves, I think this is something that we should probably look at and start gathering data and look at the disparities throughout the country about how many times patients are coming in, what testing is being done for basically similar conditions. And then we can start looking at best practices based on that information.
And because there's so many moving parts, and Heidi, perhaps somebody or you from NQF could help us with this. When there are so many moving parts and it's a system of care, sometimes you have to have those cross-cutting measures that pull several different measures together, like how many times they've had follow-up, what their outcomes is, things like that, and pull that into a single measure.
Yeah, this is Heidi. Yeah, I think that's a great point. And one other thing that this committee has looked at, and I know that others are as well, is composites, which in some ways may not reflect a true outcome, but show the comprehensive care that's provided. And I think that's where you are headed with these comments.
That's exactly right, because when you're not quite sure exactly what gives you the best outcomes, you know, although we do put some weights on some of the individual measures and the composite measures, sometimes as we get started and you look for a process that comes up with a good outcome, you measure that process along the line and come up with a composite measure at the end.
Right.
Scott?
I think that's an interesting topic to pursue, and it's as we've all agreed, it's going to be of increasing importance and financial burden.
Well, Priscilla, can we develop composite measures for AMD and cataract surgery, for example, and glaucoma and diabetes?
Well, you know, we had sort of a very beginner process group that we really talked about as a composite measure with the cataract preoperative evaluation. I think we could certainly look at that. I think for glaucoma, it's a much more likely fit to come up with a treatment plan. As you know, we had a lot of discussion when we were developing the glaucoma outcome measure. It took quite a lot to get consensus of the glaucoma community on a measure that we finally came up with. And so perhaps something along these lines would be more appropriate. And I'm sorry Mildred's not on the call, but I'm making notes, though, and I'm sure Heidi is, too.
I can tell you right now it's going to be the same scenario with retina docs.
Right.
It's going to be very, very – it's probably more difficult.
Yeah, and that's why I raised the point of what's there in the evidence, because that's the wall we ran into, and practice patterns vary. I think glaucoma is a condition where – an overuse measure might have potential, but we've got to have some good evidence for the appropriate use. So we need to discuss that. I think it's a very, very important question to look at.
When you were, Priscilla, Dave Herman here again, when you were talking about the overuse measure, were you thinking about visits, visual fields, and other evaluations, or were you thinking about medications?
I really was thinking about evaluation methodology and practice. But the problem we run into with that, and it doesn't mean we shouldn't revisit it and try to evaluate again, David, the problem we ran into was that there's so many, even if you go to the PPP and look at the evidence, the preferred practice pattern, there are exceptions. There's not a hard and fast, how often do you do a visual field? Is an OCT appropriate in X number of months? The evidence is not there to clearly support a single measure.
I think the answer to your question is actually all the above. I think there is some overuse with treatments as well. And I think, Priscilla, please correct me. I think we have discussed that as well.
Right.
As patients that are being probably over-medicated.
Right. Now, I would think that there's really good data now from the ocular hypertension treatment study regarding, and that's where you start to get into Taraki area here. It's
mm-hmm.
for patients that were glaucoma suspects, of course. And we've always said when we went through that study that we made sure that we said this only applies to patients that are glaucoma suspects. However, there's good visual field data from that, and that may be helpful as well.
Yeah, and I guess Mike Cass's article of last month, we certainly ought to look at that now from that study and reevaluate appropriate guidelines from that.
Isn't it interesting that CMS has at least put out suggested guidelines, or local advisory committees have identified some guidelines, nebulous that they sometimes may be? How do we address those? Or do we?
Well, I mean, they don't have any evidence that we don't already have access to, other than these new stuff. I mean, there's the brand new report from the Oak study, but I would hazard a guess that some of those guidelines are really not based on strict evidence.
That's what I'm thinking. Probably as much trying to control finance as much as anything else. But
right. And it obviously would be a productive thing to in a population as large as glaucoma population, it would be a productive and helpful thing to come up with any guidelines we think we can support with good evidence.
Scott, a question for you. How many people have signed up to actually submit data to this Academy database?
That's an excellent question. I talked to Flora yesterday or 2 days ago. I think it just rolled out it just rolled out probably a couple weeks ago.
It was 2 weeks ago, Scott.
That's 2 weeks ago, so that's very few people. But we just introduced it. There is a small cost involved. In my opinion, the benefits greatly outweigh the cost. Unfortunately, with ophthalmologists, in my experience, when you introduce even small costs, people tend not to want to do those cost outlays, and they tend to not want to do that. But what I told Flora, and I will share with this group, is that I think, especially with the two measures that are only reported through qualified data registries, of which probably most ophthalmologists don't have, this is a perfect way to report on PQRI measures and get paid a little bit of money at least this year at very little cost. And I think it's probably easier to do it this way than any other way for reporting measures, even through claims data and reporting on HCFA forms. And what I told Flora is to send out subsequent emails that have just this outline and stress the fact that you will make money. If you spend a little bit of money in the beginning, you'll get more money in the end, and it'll pay for itself 10 times over. The short answer to your question is probably not many.
Okay.
I think right now we have 125 that have signed practices, which consists a lot of multiple physicians have signed up so far or expressed interest.
I think the other point to make is that the registry is going to offer all PQR. It's not just for those measures that are only required to be entered through a data registry. You can use the registry for the entire PQRI project, which is what would make sense. And so that's certainly an additional thing. And we are hopeful that this may become part of the fulfillment of requirements for maintenance of certification. Where the ASCRS annual meeting is in a couple of weeks, and we're planning to promote it in every venue we have an opportunity to also, because it's really the way people ought to be going with the reporting now.
Can't agree more.
It would be interesting sometime a little ways down the line, perhaps 3 months from now, to get an idea of what the slope of data submission is. And that would then give us an idea about how soon we could start to move forward with a lot of the things we've talked about today. I know the American Thoracic Society has made great strides. They started their database, you know, many years ago, and really have kind of set in many ways the standard of care for patients that are having cardiothoracic surgery. And I would hope that ophthalmology could do the same thing.
I think, having said that, I think there's other specialties that have introduced data registries that have had a poor outcome, unfortunately. So I think this is great. I think I would like our academy to push this strongly to get people to use it. And you know, as you guys know, that people are very adamant and reluctant to do new things, especially that cost them a little bit of money. But I think this is the wave of the future, and we need to stress that we need to be proactive in doing these things. Otherwise, they're going to be forced upon us. And if we want to do it our way, we need to get going and move forward.
Yeah, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And I think everybody wants to be at the table.
David, this is Priscilla again, and I'm repeating something, but I would hope that when you are giving your report on the progress or the status of this group, that registry is an important part of it, because we really were working on that almost in tandem with these measures through trying to get them through the approval process, which was, as you know, sort of difficult in its own right, but feeling that was really a necessary addition to developing the measure. So we want to emphasize that point.
Well, and which leads me to a question that I was just thinking as you said that. You know, would a good process measure be participation in the database?
Sure. I've obviously stated that I agree with that, but.
Yeah, let me ask you a quick question. This is Randy again. Given the reluctance, and this is just stating the obvious, but given the reluctance to report your own negative episodes, how have the other subspecialties gotten over that issue with their registries or their reporting data?
They use the registries in two different ways. The American College of Surgeons started registries a long, long time ago. As a matter of fact, the Joint Commission arose out of quality and safety and other data collection by the American College of Surgery. And what they did is they shared the data in a blinded fashion. They aggregated the data and in a masked fashion. I always hate as an eye care provider to use the word blinded, and let's use the word masked, in a masked fashion. But you always got a good view of your own data, and you could compare yourselves with others. And then as people could see that others had better outcomes than they did, they'd find out, you know, could you please hook me up with someone through the American College of Surgery with someone that's getting better outcomes than I have. And then they jointly sponsored some studies, like some of the things that Scott talked about today, across the realm of surgery in multiple different sites and places. And it certainly took some time, but they really leveraged that data in a positive manner rather than in a punitive manner. And I think when we sit here, and this was apparent on the steering committee conversation yesterday, when everybody thinks about measures, the first thing people think about is something that's going to be punitive. If there's anything that we could do from a positive standpoint, particularly early in what iCare is doing to try to measure things and come up with standards, is try to use the standards setting process in a positive manner so we all want the best for our patients. And I think that certainly American Thoracic Society and the American College of Surgeons had used that tact originally to say, you know, what is best. And they actually worked together and set many of the standards. So I think that goes back to what Scott said. If we want to lead on this from the ophthalmology and from the optometric standpoint, that we have to be active in setting the standards.
Great. Again, just ask the question, doesn't it seem that in reporting data that given some of the media coverage of ultimately our healthcare reform resulting in transparency of healthcare, being able to pick your doctors, being able to know who the good doctors are and the bad doctors are, that there's just a natural inclination for doctors in general to see these registries or to look at some of the data that we're requesting as you're going that direction, and I don't particularly like that.
I'm certain there is that attitude.
Yes.
I don't have an answer for that. Perhaps we mentioned a financial incentive to them, or a masked or blind type of starting the process so that they don't instantaneously think we're trying to hang them out to dry. But I know that talking to some of the optometrists I have, they kind of shake their head and go, well, I know we need to do this, but it's not that I'm a bad doctor, but boy, this could be painful.
Right. And everybody thinks their patients are different.
Okay. Right.
But that's
I may have missed it in the comment, but one of the things that's necessary, obviously, to try to give integrity to a database is there does have to be an auditing function in the system, which we do have in this outcomes product. That doesn't mean every chart in every clinic is audited, but that there is an statistically significant auditing function.
Excellent. I notice we have about 5 minutes before we open up for public comment. Anything else that people would like to add that we haven't discussed yet this morning?
So Heidi, what does the NQF, in your opinion, what does the NQF think that ophthalmology and optometry should do as far as moving forward with measure development?
Sure, that's a good question. I've been trying to think of how I'll be framing this and writing this up. I think what we have right now is a good set of research recommendations on where the gaps in evidence need to be more clearly found out and provided before you could move toward, I think, looking at appropriateness and overuse and ultimately looking at progression of disease, et cetera, across some of these conditions. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is I think the area that we always hear, and I heard it even when I was still back at the PCPI, and Priscilla, this is the question that has often been asked, is talking about visual functional status, and specifically I think with cataract surgery, but in general I think it does apply to these other conditions, and perhaps looking at patient experience with that and patient assessment or patient surveys. And maybe we could spend just a couple of minutes talking about what are the challenges associated with doing those types of measures. Where do you think the profession, everyone could head next to try to tackle that issue? And I think the registry may be one way to approach that, but maybe we could have a conversation on that because that is the one key topic that I have always heard, again, specific to cataract, but I think it applies to all of these, glaucoma and AMD as well.
So the SQA has developed a survey. Is that accurate? Are they in the process of doing that?
The SQA survey is a surgical experience. It's a surgical experience survey, yes.
Yeah, so are other specialties using that at this point in data registries?
Is that for Heidi? I don't know.
This is Heidi. I'm not aware of any.
Well, we can certainly look into that. I mean, that's an excellent point. And I agree we need to look at patient experience and visual function. We will certainly address that moving forward.
Well, and it may very well be that you all would like us to incorporate into the research recommendations that be a key piece that's looked at, because I know it's something that's discussed often, but I don't know that there's much research out there and evidence specific to eye care. But correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I'd agree with that.
It's probably true, and it's so much of that's going to be anecdotal versus data-based. Patients are going to report their feelings of how well they did, and they may be better than 20/40, and yet they've got complaints still. Conversely, they may be 20/60 and think that's the best result they've ever had. So having that as part of the collection process, part of this process, I think it's good. I think that adds a little more human element to it, and I think that's a good move.
I was talking to Flora yesterday. I have some patients that are 20/80 in their better eye, and those patients are some of my happiest patients because
absolutely
ability to function has improved significantly. And even though they don't fulfill the 20/40 criteria, they would be excluded because of comorbidities. I think we can start looking at those sets of patients, and because again, those are some of my happiest patients, and we need to start looking at those types of cases as well.
Because your functional status increases much more from 2400 to 2080 than it does from 2080 to 2030.
Exactly. Especially in the only remaining eye.
Yeah.
Right. Priscilla, I think you were trying to say something.
Well, I was just, you ask for challenges, for us to mention challenges, and I think the challenges are, and we'll see this when we go into the literature and the studies, the challenges are that the validated methodology for assessing visual function is time-consuming. That's just the bottom line. It's resource-consuming and time-consuming if you use some sort of mandated standardized form. And I think that's a real challenge for practices, and we should admit that right up front, that should be on the table in the discussion as we move forward looking at this.
Okay.
There's a definitely, as we increase the administrative burden, it becomes more difficult to do a list of this, and that's why for many of the standards we have, they come, despite the weakness of some of the administrative data that we get, it comes from administrative data that's already collected, and anything that's new will be met with resistance automatically unless we can definitely show a near to intermediate term value for the data collection.
Good point.
So I think what we're saying, what we're agreeing to, is on these topics that we've discussed, our recommendation is to look at what is currently in the literature and keeping these ideas in mind. Is that correct, Heidi? Is that where you see us going?
I think so. I mean, the purpose of really this discussion in this section that will go on the report is to show, I think, the challenges that remain on trying to address outcomes in eye care. To talk about the things that are not really relevant, and I think mortality is a really good example of that, and also to talk about where everyone needs to head next and start looking at both in developing more of an evidence base as well as beginning to look at how can some of the burdens and challenges be perhaps overcome, and how can we address some of the other key pieces such as patient experience and functional status, et cetera. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yeah.
And I would also add that we do, when we hear about the database that American Academy of Ophthalmology is putting together and the American Optometric Association, those are opportunities to leverage those things to the extent that people will participate. And if there's ways that we can provide incentives for people to participate, the faster this will move along.
Okay.
You guys, I'm sorry, but I'm being told I'm going to have to sign off from this. So I apologize. But
no problem.
Priscilla, thank you very much for your participation. It's been very valuable.
Thank you. I appreciate the work everybody's doing. Goodbye.
Bye.
Dr. Herman, do you want to open up for public comment unless there's something else the members would like to raise?
No. Last call for other issues and then open for public comment, please. Go ahead, Heidi.
Okay. Lynn, can you go ahead and open up for comment?
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from Jody Mitchell.
Hi, Jody. Go ahead.
Jody, your line is open.
Jody, are you on mute?
Yes, I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
I'm doing two different things at once. I just had a quick question about the ophthalmic database. Is that open? Is that only for ophthalmologist, or is that going to be an open database?
Dot, could you address that question, please?
Right now, if Laura's on the line, she can comment on it. But I think right now it's just open for Academy members only.
That's right. Academy and Askers members.
Laura, are we going to open it up to other people in the future?
That hasn't been determined.
Any other questions?
Not at this time.
Laura, did you have anything? I know you're on the open line, so I thought I'd just ask.
Right. I think the only other thing we had discussed with Scott and Priscilla was that we did have a glaucoma counseling measure, which wasn't approved by the NQF, but I thought that might fit into the patient experience health risk status behavior, including adherence, or some modification of that measure we could look at for that type of outcome measure.
So, Flora, why was that measure not endorsed?
I believe the discussions were that there was too much uncertainty about how do you define counseling.
We already have a counseling measure on antioxidants for AMD.
Right, it counseling about the benefits. Yeah, but I think that was the discussion with the NQF technical advisory panel at the time. They just thought that the counseling measure was less defined, and maybe if we can define it more clearly in terms of adherence benefits or some kind of outcome that results that we want to have after the counseling.
Heidi, can we re-explore that measure then for future endorsements?
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Our third bullet point, patient and or caregiver experience with care, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it would be beneficial to have that measure re-looked at and perhaps refined. I think one of the other key issues, and it goes back to the NQF criteria about making sure that the measures are as close to the outcome or are the outcome, and the closer any of those measures can get to not only just looking at the counseling but the patient piece of it or looking at, as Flora said, at adherence, the better. One of the things that NQF now has, and it's out for comment, is a maintenance and endorsement cycle. So it would standardize, hopefully, assuming it's approved by the board and move forward, it would standardize the cycles of review of measures. And so every 3 years, the topics would come forward. ICARE is in one of them. I can't remember which cycle. But that would allow for a call for measures as well as looking at old measures and updating them. So I think there's opportunities moving forward for this type of these types of measures.
Great.
That would be great.
We'll put that on a list of things to do.
Right. And then the other question, because we've talked about composite measures, so we have actually three cataract measures, but if, say, we added something about patient function and that would be a measure group, then that would kind of address, I think, the burden of reporting that Priscilla was talking about, if it could be like a consecutive group rather than, as you know, I mean, physicians would have potentially hundreds and thousands of cataract patients over the year to report on. So if it could be a composite measure that would be considered as a measure group, at least under PQRI, I think that could address the burden problems and the practicality that we talked about before.
I think it definitely would, and it also would show a true reflection of cataract care,
right.
Which I think
all
is
facets,
incredible.
Right, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think there's much, you know, even though there's a lot that still is unknown in eye care in the way of evidence, I think there's a lot that could still be done that would be, I think, very informative to both the eye care professional as well as the patient.
Okay, so in terms of timeline, we'd obviously have to work back with PQRI to revise measures and then come back, and then you think that there'll be a call for eye care measures in say, 2 years or something, a year or 2 years?
Yeah, there would be.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so take a look at what's out on the maintenance for comment, and we encourage everyone to do that just to see if it seems like a reasonable approach. But we're hoping that it then helps people begin to target and use discussions like this to advance research and measurement so that we continually to grow the portfolio and expand it more, you know, a robust set.
Right.
So.
The only other concern is, of course, on the PQRI timeline, they're already all full for 2010. We'd have to get on 2011, hopefully, you know. There's always a queue.
There are many queues across every organization, I think.
Right.
Okay, so just to clarify, new measures for eye care are not going to, there's not going to be a call for new measures for 2 years.
Well, I don't know what the timeline is. There's none that I am aware of at the moment in the next, I would say, 6 months. But that doesn't mean that it won't occur. But I look at what's up on the web for maintenance,
okay,
and you'll see they're in cycles. I don't have access to that right now, but that will show you.
Right.
So for clarification, the AMD suggestion doesn't have a chance, or does have a chance, or where are we all with that?
I think we could consider it, definitely, when we look at the whole maintenance, as Heidi said, when we're looking, we have to relook at all of our ICANN measures, I believe. Anyway, as part of the PQRI maintenance, if we don't do it in the next year, I think at least in 2 years, we'll have to look at all of them, and that's when we can consider, I think, another AMD measure. I think that makes sense.
And hopefully the science will be to a point where we could start to make some decisions or generalizations about treatment, but things are in such a flux right now, it's hard to say.
Can't agree more.
Anything else?
Not this time.
Oh, a quick question. The PowerPoint presentation that we have on the webinar, is that available? I would love to be able to keep that.
Hava sent it out to everyone yesterday.
Oh, good.
But if you don't have it, let us know. We'll resend it.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
I received it.
Yep, came out yesterday in the afternoon.
Okay, I'll look. Thank you.
Well, thank you, everybody, for a good discussion and some great ideas. Heidi, I'll let you sum up with the next steps, and then we'll let everyone get back to their day jobs.
Sure. Okay. So next steps will be Sarah Howe and I will be writing up just a brief summary of this discussion. I'll further then flesh it out so that it would be included as a section in the final report that will go out for comment. And all of you will see that. We'll send you the summary of the call first, and then depending on how quickly I can get the rest of it written, you will see that. You're welcome to participate on the April 20th and 21st call in person or via the phone. I don't know that this eye care discussion will be discussed by them because they do have 26 measures that they actually need to review, but at some point they will be reviewing your input. So that will be the next few steps. I don't think we'll need to convene you all by call again. So thank you so much for the time. I appreciate you taking the time to be on this call outside of your busy days. I think that's it.
Well, thank you, Heidi.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Yeah,
this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.